in my big black boots. Walking in my big black boots.
Goddamn, another fucking payback with a twist. The motherfucker shot, but the punk's missed. Ice Cube is outgunned. What is the outcome? Will they do me like Malcolm? Cause I'm bust stars, new styles.
Hello, friendos. It's your premium episode for the week. Hope we're all doing well. I'm Will Miniker. Joining me, as always, Felix Biederman.
Hello, everyone.
And Matt Chrisman.
What's up?
We've got a great topic for this week's show and a great guest. And by way of introducing him, I'd just like to preemptively apologize to all of the vulgar anti-imperialists who listen to our show, because this is our second guest spot. It's now filled by a veteran, by a troop. And Chapo has always been by the troops and for the troops. I'm talking about our friend Francis, a.k.a. Army Strang from Twitter. Francis, how's it going?
Hey, fellas. Give me 2 seconds. Let me make sure that this line is secure. Break, flap, drop, pin, 14427. Hey, who's on? Hey, Mark. Hey. No, I'm on. No, I'm on Chapo. I know, fucking right. All right, look. Look, I got it. You can go ahead and drop off. Yeah. Give Mary my love. Okay, hey. Yeah, Chapo. Yeah, hey, guys. What's going on? Army Shrine
here. Hey, Francis.
Ready to do some talking about a movie. What's up?
We are really lucky to have Francis today. He is uniquely qualified to talk about this horrible movie. And he is uniquely qualified not because he's a former troop, but because he has stolen valor as Chris Kyle. He has claimed to be an American sniper before and claimed to have all of Chris Kyle's accomplishments, but actually not that big of a deal because Chris Kyle was kind of a liar.
I'm going to go ahead. One, I'm going to correct you. First off, there's no former troop. I am a current troop. I have 16.3 years so far in, and I'm ready to continue to rain down freedom and kick some ass all over the place. Secondly, just to kind of give you guys a little background on me, I am a public affairs specialist for the military, and what that means, and I'm going to put this out to whichever tanky spends the $5 to download the premium and then upload it to Dropbox for everybody else to get angry about. As much as you guys talk about, oh, these guys are PSYOP, blah, 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 let me tell you something as a government employee and somebody who is literally a PSYOP. I am literally a PSYOP. I'm telling you this right now. The government doesn't care about you, all right? They just don't. If you want to yell at a PSYOP, here I am, Army Strang, jump into my Menchie's, please. I'm just...
Yeah, classic counterintelligence.
I just want to...
Nice movie, I don't think
look,
so, friend.
I am so tired of you guys getting all the people being angry at you. I want somebody yelling at me in my mentions. I want somebody accusing me of having a giant palatial home somewhere in the heart of rich-ass New York City. And I would absolutely love it if I could just start, if I could set up a Patreon to get some troop money that I could spend on me and my further PSYOP needs. So that's my main goal here. I know we're going to talk about American Sniper, but I just want to make sure that I get my beak wet a little bit and that I get
Francis,
some angry people.
I'll have you know that at least half of our Patreon money does go to the troops.
It doesn't
go to us. It goes to the troops.
Francis, well, every weekend I book a cross-country flight with the first class ticket, and I give up my seat to the first troop I see. I don't even have to go to LA.
I spend half my Patreon money goes to Black Rifle Coffee Company products. So that's the way that I support veterans.
I appreciate it. And also the taxes that I'm siphoning out of each one of your pockets.
I don't pay taxes, actually. I'm a sovereign citizen. But every cam girl that I give money to on Chatterbait is a former Army veteran. They're all in the military.
Ironically, everything that I'm doing my recording on right now is government equipment, so that should at least, that's part of our the Chapo necessity there. The microphone, and this is like seriously $2,500 worth of equipment that I'm doing this recording on, so really putting your tax dollars to good use out there.
Fantastic. Now, as we have alluded to, the topic of this show is the man, the myth, the book, the motion picture, the legend, Chris Kyle, American Sniper. And I think the best way to jump into this is, Francis, I just want to get your reaction to a bit of current events, a news story that dropped this week. And I'm talking, of course, about Donald Trump's comments about veterans and PTSD. And I just want to read this quote here from the Donald. Daddy Donald said, When you talk about mental health problems, when people come back from war and combat, they see things, and maybe a lot of folks in this room have seen many times over, and you're strong and can handle it. But a lot of people can't handle it. And they see horror stories. They see events that you couldn't see in a movie. Nobody would believe it.
Donald, your reaction
to Daddy Donald.
Look, Donald is not wrong there. As Donald himself had to, you know, he witnessed the horror of a bone spur on his foot, which kept him from being able to go to Vietnam. You know, he just couldn't, and I understand that. Sometimes, you know, I get really bad blisters all over my feet when I was in Afghanistan doing 15-mile ruck marches through 130-degree heat. You know, I get it, man. Your feet start to get kind of fucked up, and if you're just not strong, you're not strong. Donald didn't join the military because he understood that he can't be as strong as me or Chris Kyle. So that's kind of understanding. But seriously, I don't know why anybody gives a fuck about what Donald Trump has to say about troops. He's never been nice to any troop ever unless, like, they're getting ready to suck his dick. So
Omarosa was a troop. Omarosa was an operator.
But he's wrong, though. He's wrong in this quote in at least one way when he says they see things that you couldn't see in a movie. And I did see it in a movie. I saw it in American Sniper.
That's true. All the really exciting things that happened in American Sniper, I never saw on any of my deployments. I'm actually kind of pissed off about it. Like, I would love to have, like, bullets flying and fucking yelling and for some reason calling my wife in the middle of a firefight.
Oh, my God. that was amazing. That was great.
Did you ever see any CGI blood spurts? Because that seemed to be a big feature.
No, but I did. I did come.
Chris Kyle's experience.
I did come home and get my wife pregnant with a fake baby. So.
Did you after your wife gave birth? Were you so affected by the war that when they didn't let you go in the nursery to, like, pick up your baby and pick up the wrong baby like Chris Kyle would have done, you bang on the glass, go, let me see my daughter right now?
Well, the thing is that Chris Kyle's baby, if only Chris Kyle was still around, because I believe that I'm trying to raise my daughter, my hashtag daughter, hashtag gender, in a way that, you know, would really make Chris Kyle proud. Like, you know, every day is a learning experience, especially when you're a military father. When it's bath time, people might think that that's when I take her into the bathtub and I get her clean and everything. But really, that's when we start discussing the rise and fall of the Ba'ath Party in Iraq and what exactly led to the downfall of Saddam and why we had to go in and liberate Iraq. You know, things like that. Chris Kyle was kind of living that as well. You know, when you bang on the glass at your infant baby, that really, you know, sends that first jolt of being able to sit up and stand at attention right there. So it's, you know, that's good fatherly advice that's going on in there.
Well, you know, I watched this movie for the first time last night, and this is something of a phenomenon. Like, it's not just a movie. Like, this was a hugely best-selling book. I mean, this book sold zillions of copies. It minted money for whoever published it, so much so that...
I'm assuming those were all audio copies, because I'm thinking most of the people who wanted to read that book are actually illiterate.
That's actually the book that I learned to read on. So
Francis, you read the book. I did. You might as well be illiterate trying to read that book. Here's the thing. Chris Kyle is... he's a sniper. He's not a writer. And trying to, you know, make it out to him. Like, I wouldn't expect Felix to be able to go out in, you know, 10-mile-an-hour winds coming from north-northwest and be able to put a 50-caliber sniper rifle on a target at 1,000 meters. I don't expect that because he's a writer. I expect him to write reviews about the Bastard Executioner. So when Chris Kyle sits down, and in the beginning of it, he's like, people wanted to write this book, and I said, no, I'm going to write it. Chris cannot write. I mean, he can write, he can put words together, he understands basic sentence structure, but I mean, the entire book is basically a bunch of war stories. And somehow he manages to make them, like, the most boring collection of war stories I have ever seen. Like, it's basically, you could have named that book, And Then This One Time. Because that every chapter is just, and then this one time in Iraq. And then this one time in Iraq when I was, you know, shooting some dudes. And then this one time when an RPG hit next to me. Like, that's the entirety of the book. And then occasionally, and then I went home, and I was real sad about being home, and my wife yelled at me a lot. And then I got to go back to fucking war, and my dick got hard again. My dick... Chris Kyle's dick doesn't work unless he is literally shooting somebody at that moment.
I have to disagree with what Francis said. There's an either-or choice, writer or sniper. You think that I couldn't snipe. Well, I am the proof against your lie, because I am both things. I am a sniper and a writer. I was never in the military, though I thought about it until I was 15 and started doing drugs. But I was a sniper in a little game called Battlefield 1942. I was incredibly successful, even shooting a guy out of a Spitfire airplane in a land deathmatch. And you know why I can do both disciplines? Because they're the same discipline.
No, you said that Chris Kyle's dick doesn't work unless he's sniping. And one of the notes I made to myself watching the movie is that there's a scene where he's in a sniper school and really struggling to get those groups nice and tight. And then he actually goes, he fucks his wife and girlfriend for the first time, and then comes back and like shoots a snake that nobody saw downrange. So I was like, can't shoot right unless you get your nut right. So that's a lesson that I learned from this movie.
Well, as he also says, he's better when it's got a pulse, which is really like I get it as a hunter, but like the Chris Kyle's entire like they toned it down in the movie a little bit, but in the book he's just real. He's a real dick. Which is kind of what I expect.
Well, I mean, that's one way to put it. Another way to put it is he's a fucking murder addict.
He really is. And here's the thing that really pissed me off about the movie. The first time I watched it was like right after it came out when it was nominated for Best Picture, and I was trying to watch all the Best Pictures because I hate myself and I think that those are good movies. I remember watching it and thinking that they really could have done something with the PTSD angle. Because every time he comes home, it's very obvious that he's got problems. He comes home. In the book, he even mentions, he's like, one time he almost beat the shit out of his wife because she you know, woke him up. Like, he was just so keyed up all the time that he almost punched his wife in the face. Even in the movie, you see him, like, almost kill a dog because it's, like, playing with his kid or some shit. So there was very obviously like, oh man, you could really do something with like veterans and PTSD, but every time it's like, and then I had PTSD, but then he got the fuck over because he's not a little bitch and he went back to war and killed some more people.
Well, Francis, I was thinking about this and like the way the as you described the book as being like a series of war stories that should be called and then this happened.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like the movie was a pretty accurate reflection of the book because it was basically pretty boring, and it has this sort of structure where most of the movie is sort of like broken up by his tours. He does four tours of duty in Iraq, and then there are like sort of broken up by him coming home. And initially I thought, like, you know, this is not even a movie, like there's nothing here. But I think they were taking the issue of PTSD seriously because every time he came home to America, I wanted to kill myself watching the movie. So they were really driving home the reality of, you know, how difficult making that transition is, because in the movie, it did not work.
Well, and here's a really fucked up thing is that, like, reading the book made me feel slightly less, I guess, pity, I want to say, for Chris Kyle, because... You know, in the book, he's nothing but himself. He's a Texas good old boy who's dumb, and he's nationalistic, and he's kind of racist, and that's all you ever expect out of him. But in the movie, they make him out as like, and then he's an intelligence gatherer, and then he does this, and then he does that. And, you know, the whole plot of the movie is I got to get this sniper, and once I get this sniper, I can go home and, you know, I can finally feel safe that I protected my boys because the sniper is dead. In the book, they mention the sniper. They're like, on his first tour, they're like, yeah, we heard about this Iraqi sniper. He used to be an Olympic competitor, and he's now in Iraq operating. I never ran into him. And that's it. That's the only time he's mentioned in the book. But they got it in the movie. They make it as a whole, like, I gotta go back. I gotta kill this guy. I gotta kill this guy and some dude that drills little boys in the heads with a power drill. Like, completely made up.
Because to me, the only compelling part of the movie was this, like, years-long duel between these two master snipers. And the fact that that was completely contrived is a good indication that there's not that much there in this story to begin with. I mean, I don't envy the screenwriter of this movie. I mean, he had a pretty difficult job, because if you're going to base a movie around Chris Kyle, it's just like, it's just, he's not a good character. He's just like, there was a movie
you could have made, and it would have been amazing, and it would have been sort of in the vein of, I don't know if any of you guys seen The Informant with Matt Damon, the Steven Soderbergh movie about this compulsive liar who became a corporate informant for the FBI because of this price fixing case involving agricultural businesses. And it's the whole point of them is that the guy, he presents, he's the narrator, he does a voiceover, and he is the point of view character. And then as the movie goes on, you realize that he's completely full of shit on everything, and there's all of this all this stuff that he presents that is originally taken by the audience at face value, and then you find out over time is made up. And by the end of it, you have no idea what he actually is, because he's just this serial liar. And I think a movie about Chris Kyle coming home and under the weight of, you know, wanting to be a badass hero or whatever, compulsively making up shit about shooting looters at Katrina and killing carjackers, and then they call a special number and the FBI shows up and covers it up. I mean, that would be an interesting movie. That was really the way to talk about him in a way that would have been enlightening and interesting. But yeah, just like this fucking Gomer going like, I just want to protect people by killing other people. That's not interesting. Because that's the thing. It's like, they show that he has PTSD or whatever, and that the war is wearing on him. But they always contextualize it in the idea of, well, he just wants to save people's lives. And when you took him away from the fight, he was sad because he couldn't save them. But then when he killed the sniper and then came home and started treating other veterans by taking them to the gun range, then he was fine. Because he just wants to save people.
I can relate to that because oftentimes I have to go to court-ordered therapy every few months. It's like normal stuff that happens when you deal with family court. The judge, like, makes you go to a head shrinker sometimes because of an outburst. And they say to me, they go, do you ever, like, see anything online, like, on the timeline that may have affected you? And I go, no, I'm haunted by all the people I couldn't harass.
So, I mean, just as a movie, though, I mean, like I said, I saw this for the first time last night, and I just sort of feel like it had the hallmark of all kind of late era Clint Eastwood movies, in that it's just kind of a slog.
He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, they all have the kind of the same dimly lit, sort of like desaturated palette where there's like denuded of almost all color. And the thing with Eastwood is that, like, his movies all have this kind of workman-like efficiency and competence, which I guess gives him sort of a leg up out there, but it rarely makes for, like, thrilling cinema. And the other thing that you notice early on, or at least just for me personally, is that I don't buy Bradley Cooper at all as this, like, shit-kicking Texas guy. It's not a good performance. And, like,
yeah,
I
but really... he really channeled the character by just looking like he had to take a shit at all times.
Yeah, it seemed like his the way that he prepped for this role is like, all right, have a vaguely Southern Texas accent and always have a dip in your mouth, and that's just pretty much. And, you know, honestly, that's not far off from most of the actual Texan soldiers I've ever met.
It's not far off from Felix, actually. This is another another line of comparison to our own sniper and bad boy.
I have a lot of common in Chris Kyle. And I also, if I had PTSD, I would also do what Chris Kyle did, and I would fix my PTSD by shooting guns with a bunch of other guys with PTSD. I cannot believe that went wrong.
You know, in the
it's unbelievable.
In the book, he actually mentions after his last tour of duty, the Navy was doing, well, really the DOD in general was doing a lot of experiments and just to try to figure out PTSD, because he got out in 2009, and 2009 we're still, I mean, that was post surge, but we're still having a lot of problems because, you know, we sent 150,000 troops into Iraq and let them all get shot at, and then they brought them home. And he said one of the things that the scientists discovered with him is that, you know, sitting in a chair by himself doing nothing or reading a book or whatever, he had elevated blood pressure, elevated heart rate, and, you know, basically looked like his brain was screaming. And then as soon as they put him in a simulated combat situation, everything just flatlines for him. He's just like, oh, okay, no, this is normal. Like, Kyle's brain was fucking broken. And I understand the problem. The reason why I wanted this to be a PTSD thing is because I identify with Chris Kyle in a couple of ways. I understand wanting to go back. I understand that war, for a lot of people, war is incredibly easy because you know what your training does, what, you know, your brain kicks in to do what the training tells you to do. You always have a job. You always have, today I wake up, I do this, I do this. I'm a creature of habit. I love having a schedule. So war was always one of those really simple and easy things for me. And I remember coming home from Afghanistan in 2004, my first trip to a grocery store, I looked at, like, the wall of fucking peanut butter that they had. Like, you go to a grocery store, you don't realize how much choice we have. And in Afghanistan, like, you would be lucky if there was a peanut butter packet in your MRE, maybe. And I had to leave the store because it was too much. So I understand.
Francis, are you plagiarizing this life moment from the film The Hurt Locker?
The Hurt Locker, his cereal aisle, that was one of the things that really stood. That's the only saving grace of that entire shitstorm of a movie. And we can do another episode on that fucking terrible Catherine Bigelow abortion there. The only saving grace for it was that cereal aisle where I was like, I identify with that. Everything else in it though was just like, this is shit. But I get Chris Kyle wanting to go back to war, but unfortunately me, I want to go back to war because I understand that my head is broken and that it's terrible. He wants to go back to war because he cannot stand being home. He can't stand being around his wife and children, and he's only comfortable and happy when he's shooting somebody. And that is the fucked brain right there.
There's a great line near the very end of the movie when he's, you know, at the shooting range with the wounded warriors or whatever, and he's helping them through, you know, just letting them fire off some shots downrange. And at one point, one of them says to him, Chris, why do you spend so much time with us? Don't you have a family? And he just sort of laughs it off. But, like, the movie should have done more with that. Like, no, really, why are you doing this all the time? You have a wife and two kids.
Yeah, he's real uncomfortable when he's around anybody other than other soldiers or other military people, it seems.
Well, that was the thing about all the scenes that take place stateside, right? Mm-hmm. That break up the war action. Is it, like, when he comes home, you know, I hate to say it. I mean, it's an easy comparison because we've talked about it before. But he's almost like a more taciturn version of Adam Sandler's Reign Over Me character, in that he resists steadfastly any attempt by any person to make reference to the trauma that he's lived through or any of the atrocities he's seen or taken part in. And actually, in my favorite scene in the movie is when he's at like Pep Boys or whatever, and that guy is like, are you Captain Chris Kyle, sir? Like, you saved my life. And, like, does this whole spiel of, like, my family thanks you for your service. Like, you know, like, you saved my life, sir. And he salutes him and the Pep Boys. And, like, the whole time his jaw is just clenched so tight, being like, thanks, gotta, you know, just go. And I expected him to have an Adam Sandler meltdown. But at the end of that scene, it doesn't even clarify whether Pep Boys gave him a discount for being a hero.
That scene could have been made 100 times better if Chris Kyle had just turned to me and was like, I want to go shoot the Hodges. yeah.
What are you talking about? I wasn't in fucking Iraq.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That would have been better for him, frankly, if instead of trying to help these guys PTSD by taking them to shooting ranges, which, you know what, I know in hindsight looks bad, but I'm going to say in, like, actual sight probably didn't seem like a terribly good idea to too many people. If he just gamed with them, like Adam Sandler, he might still be here, lying about murdering people.
I do have to give Chris Kyle a little bit of due. In the book, he's pretty humble about working with other troops. Like, he's never just like, yeah, fuck the Marines, fuck the Army, the Navy SEALs are the best. It's like, no, the Marines I was with, they were great. The Army dudes I was with, they were great. Though, I have to say, in that entire movie, the guy I identified the most with was in that first scene when, or I don't know if it was first, it was when he was doing Overwatch, and then he's just like, fuck this, I'm going to go kick in doors. Because that's a thing that a fucking sniper should do, and that is exactly what he did in the book, too. But that one Marine is just like, fuck that. I'm not going down there kicking the doors. People get shot at down there. And he's like, well, yeah. If I don't see you down there, I hope I don't see you ever again. It's like, no, that dude is fucking right. Fuck that nonsense.
Yeah, I totally identify with that guy, too. He was like, no, I'm actually trying to live through this. Right. I want to go home at the end of all this shit.
Well, and that's that dude was actually doing his job, where he should have been, like, he was up there to, you know, provide Overwatch for the sniper. And he should have been like, no, you need to sit up here. And if you don't, I'm going to radio back that and tell people that their Overwatch is gone. And you're going to get into a shitload of trouble for that. So how about you sit the fuck down, shut the fuck up, and shoot people? Another thing that I would love to bring out is how there are no good Iraqis in the entire movie. I don't know if you guys picked up on that. Like, even
it was fairly subtle, you know. I think
even the dude, one dude who was like, "We're gonna kick in your door, we're gonna scare you and your wife, we're gonna set up an Overwatch in here." And he's just like, "Come to dinner, look, just sit down with dinner." And he feeds them, and then Chris Kyle's like, "Let me just fucking search this dude's house for no reason whatsoever." Oh, weapons cache. Oh, and he's gonna, I'm justified shooting him now because he picked up an AK-47 and shot at me.
They find like a howitzer under his fucking couch or something.
That's the best part about Chris Kyle is, like, it's implied that he can find the evil of any living thing in addition to being able to hunt them. So, like, a snake or a deer, exactly like an Arab, and Chris Kyle can just sense when they're going to be a danger to a troop.
Oh, man. Okay. In the sort of opening scene of the movie, he's on a building in, like, you know, some bombed out fucking hellscape of a city. You know, he's got his, like, sniper's nest, you know, set up, and he's looking through the scope, and he sees a guy on a cell phone, and he's like, they're like, you got a green light if you think he's calling in an attack. And then it's like a mother and her child, like, walk out of the alleyway, and he's like, oh, this doesn't look too good. Wait, she's handing the kid something. And she gives the kid, like, a mortar, and he's like, you know, finger on the trigger. And then the film cuts immediately to young Chris Kyle downing a stag for the first time. And then when the movie catches up, you know, in time to that original moment, you see that indeed he does shoot the kid and his mom. So I like that nice little juxtaposition of, like, you know, shooting a kid and a woman is sort of compared to taking a yearling or something like that.
And also, they had it coming.
She gave him a thing.
It's her fault for giving him a grenade. You know, sometimes you got to go to another country and occupy it and then shoot people who want to resist you. And you just have to do that.
I want to talk about that scene because I remember it was the scene that was in the trailer for this movie when it came out. And it was like, you know, this incredibly played up as this, like, high tension moment, like, holy shit, like, what am I going to do? Like, this is this morally anguished moment of, like, do I have to pull the trigger on a kid? And now in the movie, this takes place during the Battle of Fallujah, which is, like, you know, this, like I said, apocalyptic urban combat, just like everything is just a bombed out war zone, like, you know, Stalingrad or Way City or something like that. And in it, like, the Marine who's, like, his body man or spotter or whatever, the other Overwatch guy, is like, if you get it wrong, man, they'll fry you. And I'm like, really? In this context, would they really? Like,
how many cars full of pregnant women got lit up by checkpoints in the early days of Iraq with nobody. They destroyed the entire city of Fallujah. They wiped it the fuck out, and nobody got charged on that shit.
That's the big thing about this genre of movie. It was the same thing in Soul Survivor when they don't kill the old man and the kid.
And they pay for it later.
Right, they pay for it later. That people don't constantly end up committing war crimes and nothing happens. We watched the fucking Collateral Murder video. How many of those incidents do you think happened and no one saw a consequence at all?
It probably but there's some PC lib back at the base is going to be like, that was a transgendered Iraqi. You can't kill them. They're protected.
We have to protect troops from microaggressions libs telling them not to kill kids.
In the book, there is a point in time where he does get investigated for one of his shots. He takes somebody down, and apparently, the CID, which is Central Intelligence Division, which is kind of like our military internal or JAG or something like that. Whoever comes out and they're like, that may not have been a good kill, and they put him on hold status for a week while they go through it. But that was that kill was the one where his CO calls him in, and his commander's just like, you shot a guy who is, the family says that he was holding a Quran, and he's just like, I wish I could shoot everybody holding a Quran, but what I saw, he was holding pressed metal and shot 7.62 ammunition. And that's his real
Jesus.
That's his real super racist moment. Where not only is he saying I wish I could shoot anybody who's holding a Quran, but he also just he refers to everybody in Iraq as savages. He tries to make kind of a distinction of the savages are the ones who are against the centralized Iraqi government and they're the ones who are fighting against us. But it jumps from you saw this in the movie. He, his girlfriend or wife, whatever she was at the time, calls him in and is just like, 9/11, oh my goodness. And they're like, 9/11, look what they did to us. All right, I'm going to Iraq. He's like, what the fuck, man?
And then it just cuts directly to it. And then they're like, we're fighting Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And it's like, aha, they were there the whole time.
Francis, my favorite bit about that, the sort of 9/11 scene, is I like that it establishes early in the movie that Chris Kyle was into Al-Qaeda way before anyone else was. He was like, I've been into Al-Qaeda since the Khobar Towers bombing, okay? I've been on them. He was into it before it was cool.
Yeah.
But just, back to the whole mentality of this, of the movie, and especially that scene in Fallujah where he shoots the mother and son, and he's like, I can't believe evil like that exists in the world. Which made me think of a scene early in the movie where he's a kid, and his father at the dinner table gives them a very hard scrabble lesson about there's evil in the world, and there's three types of people. There's the sheep, there's wolves, and the sheepdogs. And the sheep are just people who are, innocent but don't believe in evil and can't protect themselves from it. The wolves are just the bullies and the evil people, but some people can fight the wolves, and those are the sheepdogs, and that's what we're raising in this family. And I just sort of thought of that, the sheepdog is the person who's willing to do evil to fight a greater evil, right? Who's willing to use aggression and violence to fight savagery.
Well, it would have been a perfect, and of course, it would have been a perfect analogy if he was going to fucking fight Nazis or something. But unfortunately, he grows up and goes to Iraq, which is a morally ambiguous from the get-go, and continues to be morally ambiguous.
I gotta say, I thought about the sheepdog line when I was thinking about that woman giving her son a mortar to throw at a convoy of troops, because it's sort of from their perspective, if you live in Fallujah, and it's just been it's a fucking war zone, maybe you would do that. I don't know. Maybe that is the sheepdog equivalent if you're in Fallujah and you view the United States as an invading army that's killing everything around you.
And one of the things in the book that really stood out to me too, is just at the end of some story where he talks about killing some savages, and he says, I hate what they did. They've taken so much from me. And all he could think is, motherfucker, you keep showing up. You keep going to their doorstep.
They would have been fine if you'd not ever come to their fucking country, asshole.
Right, and he's saying this after one of his friends got shot, and you know his he didn't die, but he was blinded by a sniper round, and he's just like, "Ooh, we gotta go, we gotta get payback." Like, you've literally already killed 50 people yourself. What fucking payback are you looking for? This is your eye for an eye here thing is a little off kilter, and he just has this. Chris Kyle is one of those people that is that, like, first reactionary kind of person. Like, in the book, he says, "I'm a black and white kind of person. I don't see a whole lot of gray," which is really the sign of somebody who's not very intelligent. Because, you know, at some point in time in my earlier days, when I was young, I heard, Israel and Saudi Arabia, they're allies of America. And you would think, okay, that means they're friends and they're good. But if you take, like, 10 minutes and do any kind of research into some of the shit that Israel is doing or that Saudi Arabia is doing, you'll find out that it is very gray. And, in fact, maybe the black swings a lot whiter, or the white swings a lot blacker, whichever way you want to look at it. But that's not Chris Kyle. He's just like, I showed up, they said they were bad guys, so I said, fuck it, and I killed a bunch of them. Fuck them.
Well, yeah. you mentioned the thing about, like, his need for kind of revenge, and at several points in the movie, especially during the climax of the movie, where he puts a fucking bullet beautifully through the brain of Mustafa, the Syrian sniper, his rival.
They made him Syrian, by the way. Out. Notice that little change they did. Ooh. So that, you know, the whole thing of there's a reason these Iraqis are shooting at you. It's like, nah, he's not from Iraq. He's an outside agitator, just like he is. They're basically the same.
Well, in that scene, they basically the other guys tell him not to do it, because if he takes the shot, it's going to give away their position. And lo and behold, it does. And it's just this contrived action scene where they, like, you know, they hold off a larger force of jihadis and they blow them all away with really no negative consequences. I kept expecting someone to die, so it would make it a little bit more mortally anguished. Like, he traded the life of his rival for one of his troops, but that didn't happen, so it was, like, totally not morally ambiguous. It was just, like, he did the right thing.
Well,
and then, like, he gets another guy killed because he, like, makes the choice to, like, we gotta go right back out and get some after that guy was blinded or whatever.
And the
movie, I kept expecting them to, like, have a turn with this, to, like, sort of question it, and it really never does. It's just sort of just there. I don't know.
The other big problem I had, and I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, but the second time I watched it, when he takes that shot on Mustafa, he is taking, like, there's no PI, as we call it. There's no positive identification. He's just like, that little flapping thing over there, that's Mustafa. I'm going to shoot it now. Like, so not only is he being so fucking arrogant and shitheaded that he's going to give away their position, as he does, and nearly get everybody else killed, gets himself shot, I think, but he's also shooting, like, that could be literally nothing, but he's just, no, I got it in my gut. Let me tell you what doesn't fucking fly in Iraq when it comes to taking a long shot like that. What is in your gut does not fucking matter. Like, that, every part of that, like, that ending, and, you know, that never happens in the book. He does talk about, he does take a 2,100 yard shot at some point. I can't remember. But he did have good identification on it. But this one, it's like, no, this is horrible. This is goes against, like, literally every part of our rules of engagement. You cannot just shoot a flapping thing that you see in the distance, especially when you've got 50 other dudes with AK-47s around you. So this is why I always hated the movie, and at least the book kind of makes me feel a little bit better, because, you know, in the movie, he's an asshole, and he's a dipshit, and he's stupid. But in the book, he's only just racist and kind of stupid.
Seeing the movie, like, in the stuff that took place in Iraq, did you find it credible in terms of just sort of the texture and detail of what it looked like? Or was there anything accurate about the movie's depiction of what just sort of day-to-day life or shit in Iraq was like?
Yeah, there's a lot of... that is very much what Iraqi streets kind of look like in some places. Like any place, you know, you've got rich places and poor places. I was in southern Iraq, and most of the areas that I was in were kind of port towns. I was in Basra, which, if you look that up in the map, that's way far down south near the Gulf. But yeah, it does really, it does have that feel. It does have that chaotic feel as well. The only problem with it, and now I was not in Fallujah, so I don't know. I was in Afghanistan when Fallujah was happening, so I don't know how things were, you know, during that time. But the only thing that I really missed, that I felt was missing, was the streets were usually a shitload more crowded than what they were. But you know, you can explain that away as like, well, there's a war going on, so people probably got out of there, but. Yeah, I'm not a sniper. I'm public affairs. So one way or another, I'm supposed to make it sound good anyway. So.
Well, I mean, I consider you, like, the best type of person. You are a PR guy and a troop. Literally the two best things anyone could be. PR guy, the best civilian profession. Troop, the overall best profession. You roll them into one. Well, you could fuck my wife.
You know, it's really great to like my last time I did any public affairs training was probably about 2 years ago, and we had to do press conference stuff, and we have a thing called command messages, in which no matter what happens, no matter what question gets asked of you, you're supposed to put a positive spin on it. So when one of the people asks about the underage girl that was brought into the barracks and ends up overdosing on meth and is found to have been raped by at least four soldiers, you're supposed to put a positive spin on that. So what you do is you go up to there and you say, yes, this is a very tragic turn of events, and we're unfortunately these things have happened. We are taking further measures. We will be prosecuting those four soldiers to the fullest extent of the UCMJ, as well as putting out some more sexual violence and sexual trafficking and drug use training to all the troops to make sure that things like this never happen again. And currently everybody is on lockdown for the next month to make sure that nobody gets out and gets meth or underage hookers ever again. See, that's what I do. I'm very good at it.
Where was the positive spin there?
That we're doing good things. That, like, look, we're going to take this. Right. This was bad, but hey, we're doing more training. We're going to make sure that these things don't happen again in the future.
Okay. Can we do some role play here?
Sure.
Public affairs, Sergeant Francis. I'm Kevin Fuck with Huffington Post. Recently, American sniper Chris Kyle got his brains blown out because he thought it would be a good idea to help fight PTSD by making guys who had PTSD shoot a bunch of guns. What's going on here?
Well, the thing about that, Mr. Fuck, the reason why we have programs like this for PTSD and for people who suffer from PTSD, specifically combat veterans, is because studies have found that actually putting people back into situations that are very similar to what they experienced and what gave them PTSD helps them out. It gives them a controlled spot to put it in. Rather than the chaotic nature of actual war, we can put them into a controlled area where they can kind of work the outcome, and, you know, if they feel like they don't do it well, they can have a do-over. So things like this, going out and doing sniper training, you know, after getting injured, after getting wounded by anything in Iraq and Afghanistan, that actually does have a positive spin. Now, unfortunately, things like this do happen, and PTSD sufferers come in all shapes and sizes, and I have to say we are truly sorry for the loss of Chris Kyle, and we hope he and his family are doing well, and we'll make sure that they are taken care of. But I don't think that shuttering these kinds of
public affairs rusty. Officer Francis, public affairs officer Francis, Kevin Hsu, Commentary Magazine. Hot on the heels of Colin Kaepernick's refusal to stand for our national anthem, New York Knicks center Joakim Noah says that he doesn't want to visit West Point and play basketball with the cadets. How will this affect our war on ISIS?
Actually, it's going to do well for our war on ISIS. by having people not go to West Point and play against cadets, that frees up that two-hour basketball game to make sure that those cadets can do even more training. So 2 hours more training with cadets is 2 hours more training than ISIS is getting, because their basketball teams, guess what? They're still playing. When Al-Qaeda comes to play ISIS, they all show up and they play, and they're losing out on training. They're not going through. They're not going over the monkey bars. They're not going underneath the tunnels, and they're certainly not jumping through any fiery hoops. Our cadets, however, fiery hoops for that entire 2 hours.
Damn, you're good at your job.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I just want to say one other note I made of that final scene where Chris Kyle leaves his family to go help that ill-fated meeting with him and the veteran who took his life. I love just you get a glimpse of that guy for like a couple seconds, and it's like so true to Eastwood's Western roots, because he's like the shadiest looking dude in the world. He's like Robert Ford the coward, just right there. And you know this guy is off. He looks like fucking Casey Affleck in that movie.
And you know, and what I said about you know, the soldiers going out and shooting, doing shooting training and stuff, that is all true. I know that, you know, for you guys and for most civilians, it sounds like the dumbest thing in the world. But honestly, when you're a combat troop, the closest thing that you have to you is your rifle. So to have other vets to talk to, I mean, one, it's going out and just having other vets to talk to, and two, it's going out and having that feeling of shooting, but in a controlled way of, I can put rounds on through a piece of paper. Nobody's shooting back at me. I can relax. It really is centering for a lot of people. I know I really love to go out and shoot, but also I was never like in massive firefights. I just love to fuck my guns. Really, that's I can't say that's PTSD. I just love to fuck guns. I'm a Missouri boy, so that's just how it's going to work. But I do understand why it sounds dumb. It's like, hey, these guys are fucked in the head. Let's take them out and let them shoot. But it does help. Now, so does ecstasy, but we're not giving that to troops. So I don't know really where the government is going with that.
Imagine what a good book and movie it would be if it was just about Chris Kyle doing ecstasy and having orgies with all the troops. American Raver.
You know, one of the things that there is no short supply of are glow sticks overseas. We fucking love glow sticks.
I feel bad. I feel bad about all the showers I couldn't take with my friends.
Well, you know, we mentioned The Hurt Locker earlier, which is another movie that got a lot of acclaim that I think is very overrated. And you know, I asked Adrian this when he was on the show, but why do you think it is? Like, why haven't we had a single good War on Terror movie? Or is it just because all the movies that we think of that are great, like Vietnam movies, took place? They all happened quite after the war was over. Or is it just not enough time passed, or is it the fact that it's basically still going on and we haven't really, like, fully metabolized it as a culture or society?
Honestly, I think that the national culture itself is just different. Like, people think I always hear, like, you know, the Teacots and crazed Republicans talk about liberal Hollywood, but the American Sniper is, like, the first movie about the war in Iraq that's actually gone on to get nominated for Best Picture. Like, that's not liberal Hollywood, because this is not a movie that's like, oh, war is so terrible. It is celebrating Chris Kyle and all the Hajis that he has killed, all the savages he managed to shoot. So, but then you go back, if you remember back in 2005, 2006, there were movies like Stop Loss and a couple of, I remember there's a terrible TV show called Over There. And I think, well, one, those movies were just terrible. But also, I just don't think that the national consciousness, especially, you know, with a war that is kind of still going on and still getting fought about, like, it's just not something that one way or the other anybody wants to talk about. Now, I know you said this isn't a good movie, but it did really good at the box office.
Yeah, it was a huge hit.
So honestly,
I think probably because it does, I think it was probably a hit because it does present a morally uncomplicated view of the war through the eyes of a guy who's like, you know, he's like a simple, tough American archetype, basically. And he's like Sergeant York, except Sergeant York was actually very morally conflicted about killing people, and that's why that's a good movie, at least in my opinion. But, and you know, like, there's none of the sort of politics or, I don't know, broader context to the war in Iraq or war on terrorism is completely unaddressed by this movie, and it is just kind of his perspective, you know? And through that, we can kind of, I don't know. It's easier for people to come.
There are good movies. If you get a chance to watch Restrepo, And I can't remember the name of the two movies that came after that, but
Restrepo was just like a documentary, though.
Yes,
right?
But it is very okay. It is a very raw and very brutal documentary, and it really talks to, you know, they talk to soldiers and that were in Restrepo. But if you want like a fictional movie or fictional TV series, I'll give you my Army Strang's military approved list of movies. And we'll go back. We'll start with there is a short-lived TV show on Fox called Enlisted that is pretty fantastic when it comes to what it's like to be the rear detachment while everybody else is off at war. It's a comedy. You will find it.
Oh, only... Keith David was in
that,
right?
Yeah, Keith David was the command sergeant major, and I have run into command sergeant majors that are just like Keith David. Like I honestly feel like Enlisted was really well done, and I think it had. If anybody is familiar with the webcomic Terminal Lance, it's written by a Marine, well, a former Marine, named Maximilian Uteriets. He's got a weird Polish last name, but if you look up Terminal Lance, you'll find it. But he was one of the advisors on that show. So it's really good, and it really sucks that it only lasted for 13 episodes. Then if you want a good Iraq TV show or movie, get HBO Go and watch Generation Kill, which is also a very, very good book. Generation Kill, I watch that at least once a year. I go through the whole thing because the TV show is great, that it is exactly what Marines are like. And some of the people in it are Marines. There's one guy, Fruity Rudy. He was actually first Marine recon while going into Iraq. But that's a very good that is if you want to know what it's like, what the chaos was like the first couple of years, because I was in Afghanistan in 2004. It was still chaos then too. That's a really good TV show, and at the end of it, you can kind of see all the Marines just be like, oh wow, this is really what we did was kind of not necessarily bad, but it was kind of fucked up, everything that we just went through.
Well, actually, this takes me back to a moment in American Sniper that was, like, I think the only kind of – one of the only glimmers of, like, something that cut against the overall narrative of the movie, but then it went nowhere, is the scene, I think, in his, like, second or third tour of duty when he's back in country. He runs into his brother as he's leaving. Like, his brother was a Marine. Mm-hmm. And he was on the way out, and he, like, pulls him out of line and is just like, hey, bro, good to see you or whatever. And, like, it's clear his brother is, like – a ghost, you know, like he's just like gone, and he just says as he's leaving, fuck this place, and Chris Kyle is just sort of like, what, huh, why, and it was just sort of like, you never find out what happened to his brother, or like what, you know, or where he goes after that. It's just this sort of like throwaway moment.
And that's the kind of thing that the simpering lib dipshit reviewers who actually like jizzed all over this movie because they're such fucking punks and they're just dying for any kind of ability to say that any work by like a great writer like that or a great filmmaker allegedly like Eastwood is really good, and they want to be validated by it. So like, well, it's actually really a complicated story about men who are traumatized without knowing it, and they point to that scene. But like, what is the gist of that scene? The gist of that scene, and the gist of any of the critiques of the Iraq War, is that that country didn't deserve these fine soldiers' sacrifice. Like, that's what it boils down to. Like because yeah, as we pointed out, there are no good Iraqis, there are no normal people in this country. There are a bunch of savages killing each other, and it's like, why did we even get involved with these dirty fucking sand monkeys? And that is not fucking anti-war. This like fetishizing, and that is getting back to the idea of why hasn't there been a good Iraq war movie? One of the reasons is, or a good war on terror movie, is one of the reasons is because, as we've discussed previously, Hollywood is filled with such simpering lib shitheads who are so self-conscious about appearing biased that the only way that they can deal with a war is through the prism of the troops suffering. And what that ends up doing 9 times out of 10 is totally flattening the experience of the people who actually suffered the most in these invasions. The fucking people who lived in these countries that got destroyed. And they become totally flat and meaningless. And that is the thing that lingers beyond any kind of, you know, limp dick attempt to maybe wonder, well, wait, maybe it wasn't worth it. Maybe these mud people didn't deserve our sacrifice.
Now, you remember when a couple years back when Clint Eastwood did the twinned Iwo Jima movies?
Yes.
Which was Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima. One from the American perspective, one from the Japanese perspective. Both were, again, just slogs, not worth seeing, in my opinion. But fuck it, dude. He should have done that for this movie and done American Sniper and Syrian Sniper, because I want a whole movie just about Mustafa.
Yeah, but that's just it. It's like, give it the distance of time, and we can maybe try to make that empathic leap. But you can't do that, because who would he be killing in his movie? He'd be killing our precious
troops.
Yeah,
it'd be pretty fucked up. It could have been great, though. Just like, you know, ever since a young boy growing up in Damascus, Mustafa was a gifted pheasant hunter, and that ability took him to the Olympics, but he dreamed of something bigger. Killing the Kafir Crusaders and establishing a caliphate in Iraq.
I want to see...
Fuck Mustafa. I want to see the Abu Bakar al-Baghdadi movie that we make in 200 years, it's like the John Wayne Conqueror movie, and like whatever their equivalent to John Wayne then is just like heroically getting a vision from God and like meeting Jihadi John.
I just wanted to also say that I do think the scene where the evil Al-Qaeda guy uses a power drill on that kid in the middle of this town square is pretty funny, right? Since the power drill was a favorite weapon of the Shia death squads that the U.S. set up after the invasion of Iraq. So that's a nice little inversion of reality.
The butcher was supposed to be Zarqawi's like number two guy, which was Al-Qaeda in Iraq, not the Shia death squads.
We gave them drills and had them drill people.
Yeah, the butcher was the one who's going to end up getting drilled, most likely.
Yes, or his family, or like somebody who maybe knew him. Like, that's who got drilled. That's who were systematically drilled in Iraq. We're our allies and the guys we've armed. But whatever, it's anti-war because one time he cried.
Well, I mean, liberals want to be dominated by all types of people. They want to be dominated by true conservatives, the types of which don't really exist. And they want to be dominated by Chris Kyle. But one good Middle East movie, kind of a War on Terror movie, left out, Syriana, the best one.
Awesome. Love Syriana.
Yeah, we talked about that last time with Adrian.
Yeah,
Syriana's the
bomb.
Can't
say it enough. Fucking best Middle East movie.
Actually, I'll tell you a really good movie that takes place in a war in the Middle East is In the Army Now with Pauly Shore. Now here's the thing. On my list of approved military movies, In the Army Now is in there because it is one of the more military accurate movies I've ever seen. Like, when these guys, they're doing PT in the morning, like, it's obvious they went to an actual basic training place and made them do morning physical training in the goofy sweatpants and everything and doing the front-back goes, and then they go to Iraq, and then they have to, or was it, did they go to Jordan? I can't remember in that one, but, yeah, they...
I think they go to
Arabistan, I think it was called.
Something like Micronesia.
But they get to drive those awesome desert dune buggies, though.
And also, I would also say Three Kings, just because
I like all of the
cool scenes, like when the bullet goes in and like they created like a weird interior gut thing.
You could see the guy's lung like collapse. All right, well, actually, before we wrap up our discussion of American Sniper and the Iraq War on film, I do want to ask you, Francis. We opened up talking about Donald Trump's inane comments about PTSD, and really American Sniper the movie is kind of about PTSD, but like, what, you know, like, and it's obviously it's an issue in our presidential campaign. It doesn't seem like anyone's really doing anything about it, but like, do you have any vision yourself as what a government or something that could be due to address better than we are now the needs of troops who are coming home from these wars we've been fighting?
Well, there's a lot of really good things that are in place. One thing when I came back from Iraq is a thing called Yellow Ribbon, which is for the first 3 months at your home, you have like a little retreat, usually with your family, or if you're married, if your girlfriend, you got a girlfriend. And it's nice way to just like, you know, hang out with other veterans and you know, kind of talk about your experiences, and then you get the afternoon to yourselves, and if you're there with your wife, you can... It's a time to reconnect with the family, which is really nice. I think that's the biggest... That's the biggest thing that we can do for people coming home, is giving them time to do reconnections. But honestly, like, it's bad. It's still bad. It's been bad since World War One. It's been bad since... I mean, I can't remember what was the name of the... after World War One, when all the veterans stormed Congress because they weren't getting
Bonus Army.
Yeah, the Bonus Army.
Yeah, I mean, veterans have been fucked since the day that we were nationalized. Like, during the Civil War, when it was state by state, you know, National Guard, militia, that was your military, the militia and the National Guards. But once everything got nationalized, they really kind of started fucking the American troop. Just because it's easy to pat us on the back and say, I support you and thank you for your service, but it's harder to give anything beyond that. And nobody has to. Like, no politicians are ever held to any kind of standard when it comes to the military. They're just told, look, thank you. I've got you up here on stage. I will shake your hand. I will give you a grip and grin photo, and then I will send you that photo, and then we're good, right? You're fine. And it's like, yeah, but my buddy just shot himself in the parking lot of the VA because he wasn't allowed to be admitted because the VA is too full, and they had to turn him away. And this other guy lives underneath a bridge, and he spent, you know, two tours in Vietnam. When it comes to veterans, if we're not standing in front of a politician being put on a pedestal for votes, we're quietly put away in the back and forgotten about because we're not a big voting bloc. We're not politically influential. A lot of veterans don't vote, and many of the ones who do are vote Republican, who are probably worse than the Democrats when it comes. Both suck ass when it comes to veterans, but the Republicans are slightly worse. And there's really
just in terms of what, like
cutting health care,
just not spending money.
Well, I mean, recently we had, you know, where we my last pay raise from the military was 1%. It was a 1% raise. That is absolute shit, especially for the last 15 years of war. Like, I've been in the Army for 16 years. 15 of that I've been, you know, under the umbrella of getting deployed. But, you know, they'll cut our spending. They'll make it so that I don't get paid more. But you've got the F-35 project, which, you know, everybody knows is just an absolute shit heap. My last commander, he left Iraq in 2010. He was one of the last people, one of the last troops out of Iraq, you know, other than our slow mission creep currently. And he told me, he's like, you know, we had a lot of, you know, big screen TVs and a lot of equipment that they didn't take home. They just would put it, they're like, what do you got? You got some TVs, never taken out of the box, 55-inch plasma TVs, put them in that pile over there. Pull any batteries, if you got anything that's got batteries, cameras and stuff, put it in that pile. We're going to dump JP-8 jet fuel over it, and we're going to light it all on fire.
Oh, good. Wait, oh, thank God. For a second there, I was worried that ISIS were watching our flat-screen TVs.
Oh, yeah,
right
no,
now.
That.
No, ISIS is just driving our Humvees.
Okay, good, good, good.
Good. The TVs, no.
Yeah, I mean,
not going to let them watch American Sniper.
Yeah, we have incredible, and this is one of the things that sticks in my craw whenever somebody talks about welfare queens, is that, you know, the military is the biggest fucking welfare queen ever. I mean, we're the closest to socialism that you will ever find in America at this point, because everybody has a job, and we all do our jobs, and, if, you know, you're taken care of, you get a basic income. If you can't afford to live off post, we have housing on post for you. If you can't afford to go out to eat, we have food here for you. Like, we are welfare queens. We are socialism 100%. And of course, you talk to a lot of soldiers and they're just like, fucking communists, I'll never be a communist. Like, dude, you fucking live that. And it's great. Being a soldier is easy as shit.
You heard it here first, folks. What we've always said, easiest job in America, troops,
special nurses, education teachers,
nurses,
single mom,
single mothers,
nurses, yeah. It's, You know, I mean, once you get through, like, what? Basic training is somebody yells at you, which, I mean, if you're in the Army, you probably come from a broken home, so you're used to being yelled at by a father figure. Then you do some exercises for 9 weeks, and then you go and you learn a skill. I mean, even if, like, I learned public affairs. I know all kinds of stuff about public relations. Some people go off and they become computer scientists, and they... Or they become MPs and they become cops because God knows, you know, you got to get that military training in before you can go, you know, crush skulls on the streets of America.
Well, and the good part about that is the rules of engagement are much looser on, in America.
Yeah, and also, though, the great thing is I know a couple corrections officers and I know what they get paid. It's like, oh, so you're used to getting paid absolutely nothing for a really shitty job. So the military has really trained you well.
Francis, thanks so much for coming on the show, and most importantly, thank you for your service show.
And thank you for your tax dollars.
Yeah, I'm going to let you finish. But Chris Kyle, I'm letting you finish, but Simo Hoyer was the greatest sniper of all time. White Death, represent.
By the way, Francis, is that your snappy answers to stupid questions when people sincerely thank you for your service? You say thank you for your tax dollars?
That is literally what I always say, and that's just because I am severely uncomfortable when people thank me for my service. So they say thank you for your service, and I'm like, thank you for your tax dollars. I'm going to use humor to mask the fact that this makes me uncomfortable.
Should be like, ask them for their wife's email next time. See how they see. All right, guys. Until next time.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
You miss and didn't hit the lynch mob either. Gorillas in the mist without jungle fever. But I got the fever for the flavor of a crack and not a pingle, but the single. Hit my new jingle. The KKK has got three-piece suits. Using niggas like turkey shoots. My motto is freedom like a prostitute. Now if I say no violence, devil, you run respect mine. Fuck your dumb shit and give my tech nine. And if they approach us, I bury those cockroaches. And if you can't deal with my killing will, here's a new gift to get. Try my death certificate, America most. America burns like toast, like George. I'm going coast to coast. Dribble in the bucket comes a nigga with a motherfucking monster duck. Get off me, punk.
George, you watch your...
Yes!
Betty, two weedies.